Support for WYPR comes from the Park School of Baltimore's Saturday morning Rise and Shine activity sessions for children 3 to 5 years of age. Nature expedition through the Park School woods is April 20th. parkschool.net/shine.
My parents go out for the evening. My brother's practicing babysitting, which looks a lot like throwing up balloons and playing volleyball in the hallway so we wouldn't break anything.
Being a mechanical engineer, my father decides that there's basically a mechanical solution to any human, cultural, familial situation.
We go up to the very top row of M&T Bank Stadium. I looked it up. It's 185 feet off the ground.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Stoop Storytelling Series podcast. I'm Jessica Hankin.
And I am Laura Wexler. And this week on the podcast, Holiday Fears. This is the third in our 5 installment of Stoop Holiday Stories. And this week, 3 tales about harrowing holiday experiences.
Before we get started, we want to thank the Park School of Baltimore, where you won't have a harrowing holiday experience. You will have an independent, co-educational, non-sectarian, progressive pre-K through grade 12 educational experience.
So this first story by Stacey Weisberg is such a quintessential kid story in that it's kids taking parents at their absolute literal truth.
Yeah.
And just, again, confusion and hilarity result. So take a listen.
So I'm the youngest of 3, and I need you to picture the 70s because this is when this story takes place. My family's from Baltimore, but they swifted us off to Columbia, and we were one of the first families at Columbia, Maryland. In Longfellow. Howard County, yes. So, you know, it's the whole idea of black and white families living together in harmony. There were not a lot of Jewish people, and I was actually one of the kids that was like, oh, when do we get to tell them Santa's not real? I was very excited about that. And no, honey, you don't do that. So my brother's 7 years older than me, and my sister's 4 years older than me. And I'm about 4, my brother's about 11, my sister's around 8. And my brother's practicing, like, babysitting. So he's practicing on us. And don't judge, there's more to judge. It comes. So in that, I follow my brother and my sister everywhere. They're like gods to me. But I was also my mom's little buddy. So during the daytime when they were in school, I would go to the 70s Tupperware parties. Again, and I would sit on her lap. I was very cute, so I would end up on everybody else's lap. I was like the gem. It was very exciting for me. And I say this because we go back to it later, which is that, again, we were one of very few Jewish families in this neighborhood. My parents go out for the evening. My brother's practicing babysitting, which looks a lot like blowing up balloons, because he was a rule follower. Throwing up balloons and playing volleyball in the hallway so we wouldn't break anything. Velveeta pizza sandwiches, which were very exciting and disgusting. Everything he did was perfect. One night around the holidays, the doorbell rings. Now, he had gotten the spiel of, you don't answer the door for anybody. It doesn't matter who it is. When you're taking care of the girls, you don't answer the door. Now, again, we're kids, and the doorbell rings. The light's on behind us, and we look out to see who it could possibly be. They see our faces in the window. We can't see them, and the doorbell's going, and my brother, in a panic, close the shades, turn the lights off, run down to the utility room, and he's, like, guarding us like this for, like, I don't know, a good 10 minutes while the doorbell's going off, and all of a sudden we hear this singing. And this music, and all of this stuff is happening, and I think this is the best night of my life. Like, I'm so excited. My sister's crying, and my brother's like, we won't move from this spot until the ringing ends and the singing stops. And I'm so excited. My parents come home a little while later. The singing and the ringing finally stops, and I cannot wait to tell them what has happened. And I have no idea. I don't know what's going on. And my mom is going, oh, my God, they were caroling. They were caroling. And my brother's like, you told us not to answer the door. And all I look back on this now, and all I know is that my mom's like, well, there go my goddamn Tupperware parties. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, I love. I can just imagine how stressful that was for all of the kids in the house, like thinking that some sort of intruder.
It's a Christmas attack. Before we get started with the next story, we want to thank Baltimore Magazine. Its podcast, Local Flavor Live, captures all the latest happenings in the local food scene. And if you visit baltimoremagazine.com, you can find out about all sorts of events going on and stories about Baltimore.
So this next storyteller is actually, he was an audience storyteller for a Christmas show that we did back in 2010 at Center Stage. And it was like a big stoop deal because we had live radio sketches with Foley sounds and a host and a set. And it looked very 60s Madman. So I'm only saying that so that you know he makes a reference to the set in the middle of the story about this Madman set. So he came up, he told this holiday story. And just, you know, listeners, he is referencing a different also error
way of disciplining your children.
He just kind of laughs off the fact that he might have had some corporal punishment from his father as a kid, and so just be warned that that's what happens in this hilarious story. Take a listen.
As all of you know, a little bit of knowledge is a dangerous thing, but when you combine a little bit of knowledge with all the excitement of the holidays, it can be a really disastrous thing. In 1962, I was 4 years old, right in the middle of this kind of madman theme here. My father was a chemical engineer at Union Carbide, and he was of German-American ancestry, so he never really liked Christmas to start with. Christmas was always kind of this thing that had to be gotten through. So, you know, I'm 4 years old. I've got a younger brother who at that time is two. Christmas morning comes. I wake up. Go down the hall, trees lit, tons of toys, big Tonka trucks, all this heavy metal type of toy stuff, you know, real toy, not little plinky games, you know, things you could grab and hug. So I look at the things that are unwrapped, and then I start unwrapping some stuff, and I thought, well, you know, this is mine. And then I unwrap another package, and, well, this is kind of frilly and whatever. This looks like it might be Mom's. And I put that over there. I unwrap another thing, and, oh, no, that's for Kurt, my baby brother. That's a titty bit. That's too big for me. So I stacked that over there. Well, this goes on until all the presents are open. And I've got a little bit of German in me because I've sorted everything out. Here's Mom's pile, and here's Dad's pile, and here's my baby brother's pile, and I've got all my stuff. Didn't I do Christmas right? It is fun. It's a lot of fun, in fact. Well, my father, who, like our first presenters or storytellers, liked to take the Christmas spirits, particularly on Christmas Eve, finally woke up, and he and Mom come down the hall, and he opens the door, and here I am sitting in front of the tree beaming with everything opened. Now, my father was a beater. He could be a beater. But this was Christmas Day, and it just didn't seem right to pound the hell out of the kid for doing what he thought was right. So instead, my father decided to, for some reason, make turkey soup. My father had never made turkey soup in his life, but he's standing over the stove with this big pot boiling over with way too much rice, chain smoking, and with coffee, and just mumbling under his breath all Christmas morning. And my mother's kind of hanging back. And okay, well, we get through that Christmas. But being a mechanical engineer, my father decides that there's basically a mechanical solution to any human, cultural, familial situation. So we're going to apply that rationale the next year. We were in the same house the next year with my parents' bedroom, and their bedroom door, directly across the hall from the bedroom door where my brother and I slept. And, of course, both of the doors opened inward. Well, we didn't have privacy locks on our house, so they couldn't lock us in. But instead, he took a piece of rope, and he tied it to our doorknob to a large wing chair in his room. And he tied it around the top of the chair, and he figured that would be enough to signal if we tried to get out of the room too early on Christmas morning. Well, of course, my brother and I were a year older and a year smarter at that point, at 5 and 3. We get up, we're tugging on the door, we're both pulling on the door, and in true Three Stooges fashion, I'm pulling on it, he's pulling on my back. We finally leverage it. We don't know what's on the other side. We pull on it. The wing chair tips over. The slack comes down the line. Bam! My elbow goes into my brother's mouth. He cracks his lip. And Christmas morning starts with a scream of bloody murder and blood every place. We moved from that house the next year to a house that actually had those little pinhole kind of privacy locks on. You put the little hair thing. And my father did lock us in, and the night before, we were 6 and 4 then, old enough to understand, ergo old enough to get a beating, that we were not to leave that room until the street light went out. But nonetheless, crack of dawn, we're watching that street light because we know no matter what happens, it's going to be great. Thank you.
All right. So I also like that his justification for being an organized child was that he was German.
Yes, yes. There was a lot of things stated in a very matter-of-fact way that could be unpacked for days. But just the extent that the dad went to lock these kids in, to hold these kids captive, reminded me of something out of Christmas Vacation or something, right? Where the dad is like, I'll get you, kid, you know? Except he's not quite as good-natured because he's also a beater.
A beater, yeah. I said in a laughing, maybe nervous laughter tone. So
but true.
Before we get started on our last storyteller for this podcast episode, we want to thank Golden West, which is a vegan-forward restaurant located on the Avenue in Hamden since 1997.
They would be a great place to visit if you go to the 34th Street Christmas lights.
Yeah.
Then just go on over there.
Oh, they are so delicious. They have the best food, and they've had it for so long. And it's every time I go there, it's packed.
Yeah.
And it's a lively, wonderful place to take a family.
So this next story was shared by Paula Wiley, and she is a librarian. And this is a story about doing something really nice for someone, in this case her husband, and it turning into a complete endurance and survival test for her, all on Christmas Eve, a very cold Christmas Eve in Baltimore.
Christmas Eve, 2011. I was a very happy person. After many, many years together, I had finally nailed my husband's Christmas gift. Generally, I'm pretty good at presents, but my husband is a tough nut to crack. In the first place, he is the youngest of 10 children. So his idea of an ideal holiday is everybody getting his name right on the first try. Sorry, honey. Beyond that, his needs are simple. His priorities are good. He has 2 children who love him. He's got a foxy wife. He's got a subscription to The Economist. And he's got the NFL app on his phone. All good. So he is a football fan, which makes it a little bit easier. He's from the Midwest. He's from Cleveland, specifically, which makes him, hey, that's nice, which makes him a Cleveland Browns fan. So you may not know this. I did not. But being a Cleveland Browns fan is kind of the most punishing way to experience football. Sorry, baby, it's context. I have to say it. They haven't won a championship since 1964, the year that he was born. So while there's lots of football fans out there, they're really, you know, being a Browns fan is a little bit of a lonely pursuit. That's why in 2011, when I found that the Browns were playing the Ravens on Christmas Eve and we could buy tickets, you couldn't take my money fast enough. Despite the fact that, like, the kids and I are not, well, the kids weren't terribly into football and I actively think it's kind of a scourge. I knew how happy it would make him. So, you know, cash on the barrel head, right? We're going to the stadium. Besides, I thought they were pretty good tickets. I saw them, and they said sidelines right on them, and they said row 32. So I was like, dude, we're going to be right down, you know, next to the thing. They also said section 528, but I didn't understand what that meant, so I ignored it.
But that is where the story really begins, because we get to the stadium, and instead of going like right out onto the field, Bob starts like charging up these cement stairs on the outside of the stadium, right? Up and up and up. And long about like the fourth story, I realize, oh shit, there is something that I haven't thought about. And that thing is, your girl is afraid of heights. And I'm not like afraid of heights in the sensible way, like don't go too close to the edge of the roof. No, I am like paralytic, shit your pants, you don't believe gravity works, fear of heights. Let's put it this way. Let me give you a scenario. You have flown 18 hours to a country where you have never been before and you don't speak the language. Then you took a four-hour bus ride and you finally arrive at your hotel room and you can't get a drink because it's Egypt. Sorry, spoiler. So all you really can do is smoke a cigarette. And luckily, your hotel room has a balcony, but unluckily, it's on the 14th floor. So, 14th floor, not even that high. So what do you do? Do you edge open the sliding door and sidle out onto the balcony and stand with your back against the building with your eyes clenched shut and like smoke, 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 smoke? Or do you lay on the floor of your hotel room, crack open the door so that like your hand and your head can get outside, clench your eyes shut like Gilbert Gottfried, and then smoke as if your life depends on it? That's me. So, we climb all the stairs in M&T Bank Stadium, and then we go through that little tunnel thing that puts you out in the caldera that is the stadium seating, right? And we're out there, and it's immense. Like, there is all the air there is on the planet. I mean, literally, there is all the air that there is on the planet, and I'm pretty sure I'm going to die. But yet again, Bob starts going up the stairs. And at this point, it's all I can do not to, like, put my hands down and climb up the stairs like a toddler does. And we're going and going, and it doesn't seem like it's going to stop. And I get, like, my little bit of vocalization, and I'm like, so where are these seats anyway? And Bob goes, oh, just a few more rows. And I tell you, I have known this man since I'm 19 years old. And when that motherfucker gets vague, the news is not good. Yeah, usually very precise. So once again, we go up all the stairs. We go up to the very top row of M&T Bank Stadium. I looked it up. It's 185 feet off the ground. And you know what there is on the top row of M&T Bank Stadium? Is there a comforting cinder block wall that you can back your back up against? Is there an awning protecting you from the universe? There's a chain link fence. There's a chain link fence between you and all of South Baltimore. So all I can do is sit very still. As still as any person ever has been. And I have to be very still because inside of me, there is this festival of alarm. There is every fear response that we have inherited all along the family line back since we crawled out of the muck. There is the thing in your inner ear that the prehistoric squirrel is like, oh, you've gone too far out on the branch. There is... There is the thing in your gut from the antelope in your past that is like, you had better shit because you're going to have to run away fast right now. There's the thing in your heart that makes it go, because there's an owl trying to bite your children. But at the same time, I'm able to look around and I see my two children and my husband having a blast. My husband is as happy as I have, well, almost as happy as I have ever seen him. And the kids,
the kids, they were 8 and 10 at the time. Now they're gigantic. If you see them walking around, give them a SWAT for me. The kids had figured out that when they stood up and waved, they could see their shadows on the field. We were so high up. We were features on the horizon of the planet. It was bad. But if there's one thing that being a mother, or specifically like being pregnant, has taught me, that is that any situation, no matter how unpleasant or seemingly interminable, if you just wait, it will eventually be over. And so it was. 37 hours later, the Browns suffered their era. Inevitable crushing defeat, and we were able to leave the stadium, you know, walking down towards the blessed earth, all of the poisonous fear chemicals like trickling back into the glands that they'd spurted out. And so we were, you know, I was ready for a more reasonable evening. And we get back to the minivan, and it's been towed. So, on paper, and in many other ways, this is easily billed as the worst Christmas Eve ever. But the funny thing is, it's not actually the way my family remembers it. Because I'm, like, preparing for this story, and I asked them. And the kids remember it as the night they got to take an exciting tour of Baltimore's impound lots. And my husband remembers, and I had to memorize this, he remembers it as the time he got to watch Josh Cribbs return a punt for a touchdown in person. Yeah, right? I guess. Okay. Glad you were happy, honey. And even from my perspective, it was not that bad. When you think about it, nobody ended up in the hospital. We eventually got the car back. There was a Democrat in the White House. And we got to spend the day together. Oh, I know. That's my story. Thanks so much.
It's the festive season. There's singing and shopping.
The fear of heights that she has, that she articulates so hilariously in the story, it's interesting because Laura and I both, in our older age, have developed a fear of heights that we did not have.
Middle age?
Middle age.
Yes, thank you.
Anyway, I wonder, I meant to ask Paula if she's, I can't remember
how long she's had it.
Yeah. Lifelong or?
Yeah, so Jessica and I have both developed fear of bridges.
We can't.
And guess what? We live in Maryland. It's a problem. There's a lot of rivers and there's
bridges.
This like small body of water called the Chesapeake Bay that has a 300-mile bridge spanning
yeah.
it.
Which I used to cross every day as a child, twice a day, because I lived on Kent Island and went to school in Annapolis, and I never even thought about it.
Yeah, me neither.
So do you think it's just like an awareness of our mortality, or?
I think it could be like other anxieties that are using this as a proxy,
yeah.
you know, like that this is a container for, I don't know, we should look into that. Because,
listeners,
yeah, it is
if you
so
have
weird.
Ideas.
I used to not like tunnels, but now I'm like, God, give me the tunnel.
Any day of the
week,
girl.
Give me the tunnel. I want to be closed in, not like, mm-mm. Yeah, I don't know. I think it is, yeah, I don't know. It's crazy. But anyway, if you want to hear more Holiday Stoop stories, please come out on Thursday, December 12th to the Senator Theater in Baltimore for the Stoop Holiday Hootenanny. We're going to have stories, music, and songs, and it's going to be a real good time.
Absolutely. And we're going to record the entire thing as a live episode for the podcast. It will include Ken and Brad Kolodner, who are
Bluegrass
and old-timey musicians with immense talent.
Yeah. So we want to thank Maureen Harvey for producing the podcast and
the Wine Source
for supplying Jessica with all the alcohol she needs to get through the holidays. And all the other days
all
of the year.
Days.
All the days.
Every other day. That's my thing. I can't
just
have
on Mondays, but...
No drinking two nights in a row.
Oh, is that your thing?
Yeah, I feel like if I do it two nights in a row, that's a problem. But if I skip, it's a nice reset.
Oh, I get that. All right, good. There's maybe everybody could do that as a New Year's resolution
Not
for
an alcoholic.
Next year.
Not an alcoholic.
And we want to I encourage you to visit stoopstorytelling.com. Check out what's going on with the Stoop in 2020. And leave us a podcast wherever you get. Leave us a podcast. Good Lord.
You can do that
leave
if
us
you
a
want.
Review. But it is the time of year where you give gifts. So let's make it good reviews.
It would be really
right?
nice.
Yeah,
we'd
nice
appreciate
reviews.
That.
Yeah, no, cool. We deserve it. I mean, thanks. But we're grateful. All right, we'll see you next week.
Bye. If we caught on our so-called friends, our Christmas stockings will be